You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. To get this show every day, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. You can also tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Mets. Now, this is going to be part two of my two-part conversation with Dylan Short, host of Locked On Braves, as we compared what we believe are the best two teams in this division. In this episode, in segment one, you hear us going through our position by position breakdowns. We compare Jeff McNeil to Ozzie Albies and which team has the better second baseman. Then we also talk about Travis d'Arnaud versus James McCann. In segment two, we talk about third base, as both teams have some question marks. Atlanta with Austin Riley, the Mets with JD Davis. Then we compare the two outfields and see which one's better, as each team has a lot of stars between Ronald Acuna Jr., Michael Conforto, Marcelo Zuna, Brandon Nimmo, Dominic Smith. So we get into that. And then finally, in the last segment, we talk about how these teams compare to the other teams in the National League East. Can the Nationals, Marlins, or Phillies compete with what we believe, again, are the top two teams in the division? Before I play any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter, at FinkelsteinRyan. You can also find some of my writing about the Mets at MetsMorizeOnline.com.
So we're going to do Ozzie, and we're going to do Jeff McNeil, because I feel no matter where he's playing, Jeff McNeil's a second baseman. And I think that this is probably the closest battle between either of these two teams. So McNeil is the better offensive player between the two. I love Ozzie, but it's true. McNeil is one of the best players in baseball as far as knowing the strike zone, mashes doubles, doesn't have gigantic power, but he's also got more power than you think. He's a guy that routinely is going to OPS over 800, even close to 900, I would guess, in some seasons. Just an absolute doubles machine. Really, really hard to get out. Always runs super high OBPs. Ozzie's a little bit underrated as far as second baseman go, because he does play with Acuna and Freddie, so he gets overshadowed a little bit, as well as Marcel. But Ozzie, in his own right, is one of the – Ozzie's probably my pick for the most well-rounded second baseman in baseball. He can hit 25 to 30 homers. He can steal 15 to 20 bases. He plays probably the best defensive second base in baseball. Really is more of a shortstop that they've just stuck over there at second base because of Dansby. And he plays like it too. He's got a ton of range out there. It's all around. Ozzie is probably one of the top all around second basemen. So I would take Ozzie, but I'm assuming, knowing who you're going to take, I don't think that I could fault you for it.
Yeah, I would take McNeil, but it's just simply, you know, I think that McNeil's going to – I think he'll surprise some people defensively. I really do. I'm not saying he's going to be Ozzie good, but I believe he'll be, you know, posting positive defensive metrics if the Mets stop screwing with him and putting him all over the place. If they focus him at second base, if he can really get comfortable, I think he's going to be a good defensive second baseman. And then everything you said offensively, I mean, the guy has the ability now to hit for some power, but he can also – I would be shocked if he doesn't win a batting title at some point with his play.
I would too.
You know, I mean, the guy is just, he just knows the strike zone, but he's also, he just ambushes pitchers too. I mean, don't ever think you can just get over a first pitch strike on Jeff McNeil, because it's not going to happen. So I think that this is such a toss up. I don't think there's a clear winner.
And he uses one of the most unique bats in baseball. Oh, yeah. I can't get over it every time I see it.
The knobless
flare
bat.
Yeah, the knobless flare bottom. It's such a unique looking bat. It's such an old school bat. For people that don't know, that bat used to be all the rage back in like the 60s and 70s. Like, it's not like nobody's used that bat before. It's just you don't see it very often anymore, because most hitters like to wrap their pinky around the knob on the end of it, or get all the way down on the knob and use that to hold their hand in place. But McNeil's a guy that's always liked to choke up, so he likes having a thicker bottom of his bat. He doesn't like it tapering down. So it's just one of those really unique looks.
It is. And he's he certainly isn't going to change bats with the way he's hit so far in his career. And I think if we go around, like you said, that's really the biggest toss-up that we have. I mean, maybe catcher is another interesting conversation because a guy that Mets fans know really well, Travis d'Arnaud, was just unbelievable last year. Was that just a small sample size, you think, or you think he's going to be that guy going forward?
So there's no doubt that there's almost zero chance that he replicates 2020. I mean, he was 144 WRC plus. I mean, that was far and away his best offensive season. Actually, if you look at if you go by the StatCast metrics, he was the best offensive catcher in baseball. It's not going to be that way this year, but I don't think he's going to have that far of a fall. Because if you look at his numbers before that season, I mean, he was with the Rays, and the Rays had him playing the best baseball of his career too. And the Rays, they're so smart that they can fix everybody. What d'Arnaud does so well is he mashes fastballs, but he hits righties very, very well. And he carries a lot of power to right center field. And it's almost like he's kind of changed his approach from his days as a youngster, where he's not trying to pull the ball anymore, where he's letting the ball get in a little bit closer. It's resulted in some more Ks than he had before, but the power has finally started to show up. And Brandon, it's all about staying healthy. I would take d'Arnaud over McCann because I think d'Arnaud is a better offensive player than McCann. And I think while McCann is a better defender, I don't think the difference between the two defensively is as great as the two offensively. Although, to be fair, Mets fans should just be happy that they've got a significant upgrade behind the plate.
They do. And the one thing I'll say about d'Arnaud before we move on is I think he's one of those players that really needed to get out of New York because once these guys make their debut, it's like they have to live up to the past grades. So as soon as the Mets traded for d'Arnaud, here's our next Mike Piazza. And it's just putting so much on his shoulders. And maybe that's why he felt like he had to hit those home runs. And he didn't just kind of go based on his natural swing, which is that opposite field power like you talked about. So I think it was the best thing possible for his career that the Mets basically just DFA'd him after, I think it was 9 games coming off Tommy John. But yeah, he's been great for Atlanta. I don't think he'll be that good again, but I think he'll still be really solid. We're going to switch gears and talk about third baseman in just a minute. But first, I want to tell you about the best tasting protein bars ever, and that's Built Bars. And the great thing about Built Bar is when you go to BuiltBar.com, you will find new flavors for every week you check in. It always seems like they're cooking up something new. One of the new flavors is the Churro Puff Bar, which will be released later this month. It's made with a premium collagen protein blend with 17 grams of protein, only 130 calories, and only 5 grams of sugar. It's gluten-free, it's preservative-free. If you like puff bars, this is a flavor you will love. And there are other great flavors you can find. My personal favorite is the cookies and cream. My dad likes the cherry barcia. My brother-in-law likes the lemon almond cheesecake. There really is a flavor for everyone. If you want to try one of these protein bars that tastes like candy bars, go to BuiltBar.com and make sure you use our promo code LOCKEDON20 to get 20% off your next order. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON20 for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with our brand new Locked On Today podcast. Hosted by Peter Bukowski, Locked On Today is a daily podcast breaking down the biggest stories with analysis from our local experts. Start your day with all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes by subscribing to Locked On Today, wherever you get your podcasts. A third base is interesting. Who is playing third for the Braves right now? Because I think the Mets are in a similar boat where you don't really know for sure.
Well, it's going to be Austin Riley, I think. And Riley's done well this spring, but the Braves want Riley to take that position and to grab it. He's been unable to do so the last two seasons. Full disclosure, all my listeners already know this, but for your listeners that are just hearing me for the first time, I'm not a huge Austin Riley guy. I think there are traits about Austin that will make you drool and that will make you want this guy to be that guy. I think he hasn't shown that type of growth at all. Now this spring he's hitting good, but I mean, we're a week into spring training. So I would expect that. I mean, all of your numbers are suspect at the moment. For Austin, he made some big strides a season ago, as far as contact rates. In 2019, he had that super, super hot month and a half where it seemed like he came up and blasted like 18 homers. It was some ridiculous number. He came up and was just blasting homers left and right. And then pitchers kind of figured out that at the time for 2019, the story was throw him a slider down and away and he's going to swing and miss every time, which he did. Last year, he came into the season really looking to adjust to being able to hit the slider. The problem was when that happened, he was no longer able to catch up to the premium velocity inside. So he made more contact, significantly more contact, and he walked more last year, which are all great, but he lost his power stroke. And it was like he was making contact just to make contact. So for Austin, the hard thing for him is going to be bridging that gap. He's going to have to find that balance between the power, which is going to be absolutely essential for him to realize what Braves fans and what the Braves front office wants him to be versus making enough contact to reach that power. He's a better defender than he gets credit for. Like, he's not an elite defender by any means. StatCast data will back that up. But he's got pretty soft hands. His arm can be kind of inaccurate here and there. But I think a lot of that has to do with them bouncing in between left field and third base. Overall, he's got good actions at third base. You can clearly see that there's the talent there to be an above average defender, even if he hasn't done it yet. But this is a big year for Riley. If Riley kind of falls flat on his face this year and Jake Lamb is performing well, I don't think it would take much for the Braves to replace him or put him into a hard platoon with Jake Lamb. I think that the Braves want desperately for Riley to take over, and they don't have a ton of third base in the system right now. So he's got a little bit of leeway there. But I would not be shocked if he's not performing up to snuff by the All-Star break. If there's even a sniff that Oakland could trade Matt Chapman, the Braves would be the prime target. Or the Indians, if the Indians start out horribly and they just decide to field offers for Jose Ramirez, while I think the Yankees would be the team to beat in that deal, the Braves would certainly be in on that too. So it's a big deal for Riley. I think if I'm being honest, this is going to catch me so much flack. I think if you're judging the two based on what they've done right now, I would probably take JD Davis because neither of them are good defenders at the moment. Riley's pretty substantially better defender than Davis, but Davis is a pretty substantially better hitter than Riley right now. And I think when I'm talking about third base, I think offensive prowess is a little bit more important than defensive.
Yeah. I think we're both in a similar boat where I think neither of us really likes our third base, but I've been kind of ragging on JD Davis all off season. I mean, the bat, it has so much potential in 2019. We saw it, but you also look at his career as a whole, and he just couldn't hit with the Astros, and he had a little bit of help in 2017 and still couldn't hit. And then, you know, this past year he went through his slumps. So I still don't know if I completely buy into 2019, although I do agree that he's a superior offensive third baseman compared to Riley, but the defense just concerns me. So I think there's big question marks there, and you might be in this position mid-season where both the Mets and the Braves are looking at the trade market to upgrade that position.
I was going to say, I'm actually very shocked that JD Davis is still a Met. I thought for sure he would have been dealt by now, either him or Dom. I don't see any way that both of those guys are members of the Mets by the end of 2021.
Yeah, and I just can't see them moving on from Dom the way that he's really kind of ingrained himself in the clubhouse. Not that Davis hasn't either, but Dom is,
especially if you know the DH is here in 2022. Mm-hmm,
exactly.
I mean, Dom or Pete, one of those two is your DH. But I thought for sure JD Davis would be dealt and they would go with a little bit more of a well-rounded third baseman. Just throwing names out there. I think if the Reds decide to trade Eugenio Suarez as a Braves fan, that's who I would want. I think that's one of my overall main targets. My perfect storm is that the Braves get Mike Brousseau from the Rays. That's who I want more than anybody. But I would not be shocked to see the Mets go out there if the Reds just hose it this year in the Central and kind of blow up a little bit and don't play well. I wouldn't be shocked to see the Mets go out and try to bring in a Eugenio Suarez, who's also a very, very good defender.
And I mean, it could be different front offices, although with Sandy Alderson back, the Mets have made a lot of trades with the Reds in the past. That's obviously a team that they have previously been pretty comfortable dealing with. I think to kind of close here before we just talk about the division as a whole, let's just talk about these outfields as a whole, offensively and defensively. I think the Mets might have the better offensive outfield, but there's no question defensively, the Braves have a huge edge.
Oh, I'll disagree with that. I think Acuna and Ozuna themselves are better than now. I think Michael Conforto is a phenomenal player. I think he's a good eye at the plate. I think as long as he stays healthy, he's a good bet for 30-plus homers, going to drive in 100-plus type of guys on this team. He's also a pretty good defender in the corners. It's just about staying healthy for him. But Acuna is one of the best offensive players in baseball. So is Marcell Ozuna. And Christian Pache, I know Aram is super low on Pache's offense, but Aram is a Marlins fan. He's not used to seeing prospects who are well-rounded. Christian Pache is going to he's going to open so many people's eyes with his offense. I don't think he's going to come out here in his first season, hit 300 with 30 homers or anything like that. But when you see this guy up close and you see the way that this guy swings and that he approaches his at bats, you're going to see that low hit tool on Fangraphs. And you're going to ask yourself, how in the world do they have him rated so low in his hit tool? He is a far better offensive projection than people think he is. And while I think that at best, he's probably going to be around 255, 265 this year, it's not going to shock me at all if he gets up to 275 and hits over 20. I'm going to project him kind of low offensively. I'm going to project him at 255-ish with 15 homers type. But you're talking about not just an elite defender, but a top one or two defensive center fielder in baseball. This guy is Byron Buxton levels of good in center field. He is, like, I know Mets fans know the name Andrew Jones. Christian Pache is that level of defender. So I am so sold on Christian Pache that the Braves, when there were rumors about the Braves going for Jose Ramirez, there were talks. Those talks did not progress very far because the Indians wanted Christian Pache. And the Braves, smartly, in my opinion, said he is the one untouchable piece. So I think he's going to shock a lot of people.
I think that was definitely a short sight by me. I was thinking of Ender and Ciarte as the third outfielder. So,
dear Lord, I hope not.
That was where I was coming from, because I look at the Mets right now and I wouldn't be surprised if it's Dominic Smith, Brandon Nemo, Michael Conforto, that all of them could have WRC pluses in the 140s. When I just look at those three guys offensively. So that's why I said that. But granted, if everything you said about Pache comes true, and also if you have him and Acuna defensively, I think it'd be hard for me to say that the Braves don't have a better outfield. So
I think it'll be fun offensively for the Mets. I don't know about 140s. Now, I know Nimmo's done it twice, but he's also only made it half a season once. I think Conforto is going to lead that outfield. I think Dom is that wild card. I think if Dom makes it a full season in left field, I think not having to here's how I think Dom should approach left field. Now, obviously, he's a player, and I'm assuming he's a super competitive guy, so he's going to want to go out there and be as good a defender as possible. I think the defense between him and Ozuna is going to be – I think Ozuna is probably gets more love analytically, defensively, particularly with, like, DRS and stats like that. OAA does not like Ozuna. It won't like Dom Smith either. Offensively, though, I think Dom is going to really shine. I would not be shocked. 140 is kind of high for a full season's worth. I think a lot of us got really, really spoiled with 2020. I think that if you're talking about 120s to 130s, I could see that happening for most of them. Nimmo, it's going to be hard for me, because if Nimmo doesn't reach a lot of power this year in center field, since he's being weighed against other center fielders, that'll kind of prop him up a little bit, offensively speaking. And the fact that he's going to carry an OBP at or over 400 is going to really boost his WRC plus. But it's Conforto for me in the outfield. I think if there were one player on the Mets, aside from Lindor, obviously, and DeGrom, I think Conforto is probably my favorite player on the Mets to watch. Overall, I mean, it's a fun team. It's just, you know, as a Braves fan, I have to go, ooh, Mets. But to be completely honest, I mean, the Mets aren't my least favorite team in the East. That spot is always reserved for Philadelphia, and it's always funnier to me when Philadelphia sucks, just like they're going to this year.
We continue to talk about how these two teams stack up in the National League East in just a minute, but if you're going to place a bet on which team is going to win the division, make sure you do that through BetOnline, which is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football's over, but we have the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. With real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine, BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. So head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with our promo code LOCKEDON. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, your online sportsbook experts. When we look at this division, as much as everyone talks about how competitive it's going to be top to bottom, I don't buy what happened with the Marlins last year. It was such a fluky season. I don't think they'll be a 100-loss team. I think they'll be improved from where they were, you know, in 2019, but I'm not buying them winning more than 75 games at most. I think the Phillies can fall apart really quick. And the Nationals are just a weird team because
they're so top heavy. Exactly. Like there's such a weird dichotomy because you've got, on one hand, you've got Juan Soto and you've got Trey Turner and you've got Scherzer and Strasburg and Corbin. But aside from that, Victor Robles is a good defender, but offensively he hasn't done anything yet. Zimmerman is not the Zimmerman that we know. Starlin Castro is a good bet to go for a 101 or a 102 WRC plus, basically league average. He's not going to hurt you. It's not really going to help you. Third base. I mean, I guess they're going to count on Carter Kieboom having a big season after getting LASIK. But aside from Soto and Turner, offensively, they're just not impressive. And in this division, if you don't have it offensively, you're not going to have it. Because even the Phillies, for as much crap as we give them, offensively, they still have some pieces. Depending on what you think about Didi, Harper is a very good player. I know we all love to hate him, but Harper's an excellent, excellent offensive piece. If McCutcheon's healthy, he'll be decent. I think Alec Bohm is a big thing for the Phillies this year. I think Hoskins not having to be in the top three in the order can help him out some. JT Romuto, obviously. I think the Nationals are going to be in danger this year, especially if Scherzer is kind of fighting Father Time a little bit now. In 2020 wasn't just injuries, that it was just, you know, kind of because he's 37. I think the Nationals can be in real danger of finishing last in this division.
Wow, even below the Marlins. I don't know if I'd go that far.
The Marlins are weird to me. I think talent-wise, I think they're the least talented team in the division. But when you have that many young guys, momentum is such a big thing for them. And we saw it in 2020, and they're one of those weird, and I hate to use this cliche term, but they're such a scrappy type of team that they can win games that they have no business winning. They're one of those teams that can beat you simply by outplaying you. And
I got a guy for you that's the perfect encapsulation of everything you're saying with the Marlins. A guy that should not be as good as he is, but you'll watch a game and he'll win the Marlins games that they have no business winning. And it's John Birdie.
Yes. Like, Birdie is not a good player. Neither is Miguel Rojas, by the way. But they just seem to they just fit with what that happens. There seems to be one or two points in a game where, like, they do something that you look at and they're like, he's not talented enough to do that. And he just kind of does it. Like, that's kind of how I feel about that entire Marlins team. Like, when they made the playoffs last year, that whole time I was looking at them like, they're not a playoff type of team. I don't know how they got in, but they just kind of did. And they play really hard. And even though I can't stand Don Mattingly, he's a complete D-bag, and he always has been and he always will be. That team, they take on that trait, and they're one of the most annoying teams to have to play because they are a super aggressive team on the base pass. They are going to hit you on purpose if they can't get you out. They're just one of those super annoying teams that just seems to scratch out games, and where, like, they're starting Elizer Hernandez, and you think that, all right, we should blow him up for 5 runs within the fourth inning, but you look around, it's the 7th inning, and somehow it's still a 1-run game. That's just kind of how it goes with them.
The Marlins are the team that isn't going to win the division, but they might cost somebody the division. Because there's going to be one team where the Marlins are going to win 12 games against. And you're going to look at the end of the year and you're going to say, I cannot believe the Marlins beat us this many times and swept us to close our season.
I think that's absolutely true. And you're talking about, they got a lot of young pitching there. But Sixto, you're going to see Max Meyer this year, and he's going to blow some people away. But Edward Cabrera is another one. Don't be shocked when he comes up and starts dealing. They've got a lot of young talent there. J.J. Bleda, I would not be shocked if he gets up at some point this year. I mean, they've got some pieces to go along with Brian Anderson, who I've always felt is good, but not So I think Brian Anderson is a good but not great third baseman. I think that it helps him that he's on the Marlins, that he can kind of be their main guy. But I think on any of the other main teams in the division, he's a tertiary type of guy. And then it's okay. The Marlins don't really have that position player who's the guy. That's one of the things that when you're going roster by roster with them, the Marlins stand out because they don't have that guy that you look at and say, this is one of the elite players in baseball. Every other team in the division has one of those except for the Marlins. And somehow they make it work. So I won't be shocked if they don't win more than 71. I also won't be shocked if they win 82 or 83. They're that type of team. If you told me that they just missed the division by a couple games, I wouldn't be surprised. I also wouldn't be surprised if they're out of it by the deadline.
Yeah, no, I think all that's fair. I mean, like you just said, I mean, Brian Anderson isn't that guy. So I think that definitely kind of, when you're talking about these teams, it does make us maybe undersell the Marlins a bit. And the pitching is coming for sure. Sixto Sanchez mixing with Sandy Alcantara. I mean, they got some arms. So like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if the Marlins made a little bit of noise. But overall, I think our big conclusion from this crossover is this feels like a two-team race where if everything plays out the way it should, this could be a pretty exciting season between the Braves and the Mets.
I would agree. I think this is the Braves and the Mets division this year. I think the Braves are a 100-win team this year, but I think the Mets, I'm not going to be shocked if the Mets are, you know, 88 to 92 or 94 either. I think both teams have a chance. It's for the Mets, it's all going to hinge on that defense and their health. If they can stay healthy and they can get better defensive play than people are expecting, then I think that they're a pretty easy lock to at least win one of the wild cards. I'm still going to roll with the Braves, not just because I'm being a homer, but also because I think the Braves are one of, if not the most well-rounded teams in the National League period and one of the most well-rounded in baseball. They don't really have a glaring hole, offense, defense, or pitching. So I think that kind of helps them a little bit. But I think that the Mets this year, I think that people who go around thinking that, oh, it's the Mets, they'll be out of it in 80 games, I think that this is a different Mets team. I think that the start for both of these teams is going to be very important, especially for the Mets. I think it's very important for the Mets to start off hot this year. If they do, then I think that this is a much different Mets team. And I think getting to the postseason, I think that should be the only goal for the Mets. Get to the postseason. If you get to the postseason, you're talking about 5- and 7-game series. It's going to be very, very difficult for anybody to deal with DeGrom, Syndergaard at that point, because he's going to be back in June, Stroman and Carrasco. And then you've got Taijuan Walker as well. But really, DeGrom, Syndergaard, and Stroman, it's going to be really tough to beat in the postseason.
Yeah, I've been saying for the past couple of years that the greatest sin in baseball is that Jacob DeGrom hasn't thrown a game in October since 2015. So
the greatest sin in baseball is that he's not a member of the Braves.
I definitely don't agree with that one.
Let's just say I'm not going to there are precious few players that I would not give up for Jacob DeGrom. I would give up – if you take Acuna off the table, I would literally give anybody on the Braves aside from Ronald Acuna for Jacob DeGrom. Wow. And I just got done telling you how much I love Christian Pache.
And there's nobody on the Braves. I don't know. If we
You'd be nuts not to do Acuna because he's under contract for 10 years and $170 million. And he's got the potential to be Ken Griffey Jr. But that's it. And there's just – and even then, that's a guy that the Mets physically cannot trade, Jacob DeGrom, because they would get obliterated by their own fan base. Like, for better or worse, DeGrom is a Met forever. And I hate to say it, but I'm going to continue watching him from afar and dreaming about him.
Yeah, because he's so much fun to watch. Well, I guess for my listeners, why don't you tell them where they can find your work?
So if you just want to hear more and you want to keep up with the Braves, maybe you just want to laugh at the Braves if we don't do well, maybe you want to keep up with the enemy, you can follow me on Twitter at Dylan X Short or the Locked On Braves account, LockedOn_Braves, or you can always follow me on the podcasting scene at Locked On Braves or on the Platinum Sombrero as well. You may hear me make fun of the Mets. Just remember, I told you guys, I think the Mets are the second best team in this division. And as a boon to you Mets fans, I will be very, very honest with you all. Jacob DeGrom is my favorite player in baseball.
Mine too.
Yes. And I am including every player currently on the Braves. Jacob DeGrom is my overall favorite player in baseball. So there you go, Mets fans. Don't say I never gave you anything. Ryan, if my Braves fans want to follow you for a little bit or even just keep up with what's happening with the enemy, why don't you let them know where to find you? But be careful. The Braves fan base can be a little violent at times.
That's fine. I can take it. They can find me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan or find the show at Locked On Mets.
There we have it, guys. That is crossover part two, Braves and Mets. Not just a crossover for the second part here, but definitely the one that I think is going to come down to the division winners here.
That'll be all for today's edition of Locked On Mets. Still going to give you a couple more episodes to close out the week here. You might have an episode Saturday morning to make up for the missed episode on Tuesday. So make sure you're following on social media and subscribe to the channel to get all of that coverage of the New York Mets. And also, if you're about to get into your fantasy baseball draft, make sure you check out a new resource that helps give you an advantage in all of your leagues, and that's Locked On Fantasy Baseball, a daily fantasy baseball podcast hosted by veteran fantasy analyst Scott Cullen, who uses data and nearly two decades of fantasy baseball experience to offer the strategies, waiver wire pickups, and all the things that lead to league wins. Whether you're playing season-long fantasy, dynasty leagues, DFS, whatever it is, Locked On Fantasy Baseball has you covered. So subscribe to Locked On Fantasy Baseball wherever you get your podcasts.